I'm Tom Zalatni.
And I'm Tefera Jemian.
And you're listening to the No Bad Food Podcast. If you're new here, welcome. This is a show about great food and the people who love to make and eat it.
Our mandate is simple: to explore, taste, and learn about food in ways that celebrate all the things that make it great. Every week, we dig into a different dish, meal, ingredient, cuisine, or piece of food media, exploring the history and culture around it, sharing favorite recipes, and learning from our wonderful guests. The only rule?
You gotta love it.
After all, there's no such thing as bad food.
Before we dig in, we'd like to take a minute to acknowledge that the studio where we're recording is situated within the traditional and unsurrendered territories of the Ganyangahaga First Nations. As settlers, it's important that we remember that the lands we occupy are not our own, and that we engage in conversations that challenge the colonial mindset. We want to encourage you to take some time today and every day to reflect on your relationship with the land you live on and with the Indigenous communities of that area.
So today we're talking about one of my favorite things.
Apples.
No, we already did that.
Well, I'm out of ideas. What are we talking about today?
I like more things than just apples.
It's true. I'm sorry.
We are talking about a very special limited edition produce item.
Is it limited edition?
When I say limited edition, what I mean is it is not available year-round.
Okay, so it's like the McRib. It's not like only while supplies last, never again kind of limited.
I'm really offended that you just compared it to the McRib, actually. It's not a fruit. It is a vegetable, and yet it's mostly used in desserts.
It's also not the McRib, right?
It's not the McRib.
Okay.
What we're talking about today, folks, my favorite, the thing I look for in the spring in stores everywhere, is rhubarb.
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 Rhubarb is more than just a thing that you say in the background in order to make it sound like people are having conversations on television.
So much more. Rhubarb is a rhizomous plant, meaning it grows from a rhizome.
Is that, let me see if I'm remembering this right, potatoes are also rhizomes? It's like a thing
potatoes
that grows underground?
Tubers.
Oh, I don't remember what a rhizome is then.
A rhizome grows underground.
Okay.
A rhizome is a modified subterranean plant stem that sends out roots and shoots from its nodes, and they grow horizontally.
Okay, so it's a sideways root vegetable.
Kind of. So like a potato is a tuber.
Right.
It's possible that a potato puts out rhizomes, but a potato is not a rhizome.
Potato.
Turmeric is a rhizome.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Rhubarb is rhizomous, but the rhizome is not what we eat. Rhubarb is one of the few vegetables, I think, where the thing you eat is the stem. And it's not that you can eat the stem in addition to other parts of the plant. It is that the stem is the sole edible part of the plant. So rhubarb was used medicinally in Asia for a very long time. It originated in southern Siberia. It's used in Chinese traditional medicine. But people didn't really start using it as food until like the early 18th century in Europe.
Okay.
So it was used medicinally before sure. then. But in the early 18th century, there was a hybrid that happened, and that began to be eaten culinarily.
Okay.
Now, at first, people ate the leaves because they look like Swiss chard, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So people go, okay, this looks like food we already eat, cooked it up. Unfortunately, rhubarb leaves contain an extremely high concentration of oxalic acid. Oxalic acid is actually lovely culinarily. Mm-hmm. It's in like wood sorrel gives it that lemony flavor. It's sure. what gives rhubarb its tart, bright flavor. Mm-hmm. Too much of it, however, causes acute intestinal distress at
oh.
some points, fatally.
Oh.
People were eating the rhubarb leaves and it was not going well for them.
No.
At some point, they figured out that the stems are just fine and in fact, delicious.
That's wild to me because like, when I look at a rhubarb, mm-hmm. the stem is this like beautiful red color. It kind of looks like celery and the leaves are just leaves.
Yeah.
You know?
But it does look like Swiss chard.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like the fact that this plant, the only part suitable for human consumption is the stem. I'm like, I understand why we didn't start eating it until pretty recently, actually.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair. But again, like, I don't know. I hear that and I think about that and I'm like, this guy just looks like a cousin of celery.
Sure, but if you had eaten the leaf and it had put you in acute digestive distress, mm-hmm. you probably wouldn't eat the stem.
No, I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if you had eaten the whole thing, you know, stem and leaf, as we usually do.
I would just assume the whole thing is poisonous, yeah.
Now, when I was a child, we had a very large rhubarb patch.
Okay.
This was when I lived in Ontario. We had an acre of land, and part of that was a very large rhubarb patch. It was great. When I was small, I could hide under the leaves because they're very, very big, and that was extremely nice. But it was hammered into our heads to not eat the rhubarb leaves, right? Because we had loads of it in the backyard.
Right.
And it became a running joke in our family. So now when we're saying goodbye, we say, like, bye, don't eat any rhubarb leaves. And that's, like, how we say stay safe in our family.
I like that.
Yeah. It's also, my mom would use it when she knew she was being, like, overly protective when we were going somewhere. And she'd be like, do you have this? Do you have this? Remember to do this. Remember to do this. Don't eat any rhubarb leaves. So, you know, it's a little fun part of family lore in addition to being really just one of my favorite things to eat.
It's
I
so
love
tasty.
It.
It's yeah. so good. Yeah, I think for me, like, I only ever was exposed to rhubarb in pie, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, rhubarb pie, strawberry rhubarb is the common?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, because they ripen around the same time, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And your strawberries, you probably don't have as many of them. So yeah. It's nice to mix it with something that's really easily available.
Well, and it's nice, too, because it gives that tartness that, like, cuts the sweetness of the strawberry a little bit, and like that's a beautiful combination. It adds a little extra texture to it. Like, it's just it's one of those things that feels like nature knew what it was doing when both of them ended up being ripe around the same time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, they just work really. I mean, beauties of eating seasonally, right? Mm-hmm.
So I looked into the rhizome thing,
okay,
just to set our minds at ease here, because it was going to bother me for the rest of the episode, and I'm sure I'm not alone. Tubers are a type of rhizome.
Okay.
But essentially, they're a rhizome that has gotten thicker.
Fat.
And fat. Yeah, basically. Yeah. So it's when a plant that, like, grows and stores nutrients in its root system, like a rhizome, has a section of the rhizome that just, like, becomes bulbous, essentially,
okay,
is where the tubers come from.
And so all the little shoots that a potato puts out, mm-hmm, they look more like what I think of as a rhizome.
Well, exactly. And
think
basically,
of as
like,
as rhizome.
Yeah, exactly.
I think ginger is also a rhizome.
Yeah. Ginger and turmeric and anything kind of like that, you know, when you buy it in the store, if it looks kind of lumpy and thick.
And like it's grown horizontally a little bit.
Yeah. Whereas the tubers, you know, the potatoes, the sweet potatoes, the yams, those kind of guys, they tend to be a little rounder because it's basically just like the nutrients just like stop.
It's a rhizome that stood still.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like when you're blowing up a balloon.
Yeah.
You know, you ever get those really long clown balloons?
Yeah.
It's when you start blowing those up and instead of blowing up evenly, a big ball appears in the middle at first, and then at some point it starts to even out.
That's a potato.
That's a potato. The big ball is the potato.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love this.
So now we know.
Now we learn things about rhizomes.
Indeed.
So speaking of rhubarb and pies, do you want to know something fun?
I do.
For a very long time, rhubarb was referred to as pie weed.
I get it.
Because it's a weed that you can make pie out of.
Does it grow like a weed?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So I really, really, I'm actually looking for rhubarb plants this year because I am longing for a rhubarb patch. I love rhubarb and it grows like crazy. I'm going to show you a picture of what it looks like when it grows because it actually looks like something that people use for hedges a lot around here. So yeah, this is like what a rhubarb plant looks like. It just looks like a weedy little patch.
Okay, yeah. I have seen hedges that look like this. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. And the leaves on this are a lot bigger than I was expecting just from having bought rhubarb in the store.
Rhubarb leaves are enormous. They trim them before they bring them to market. Yeah, if you look, you'll see that it's like cut off at the top there. Rhubarb leaves can get absolutely huge. Here's a picture of some larger rhubarb plants.
And so now this makes a little more sense to me that people would go straight to eating them, because to me that reminds me of collards almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like just in, like it's big, you know?
It's a huge leaf.
There's a girth to it.
Okay. It looks like a leaf that Totoro could use as an umbrella.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, the stems are beautiful, but when you look at the plant, you don't see the stems. You see the leaves. Because the leaves are absolutely huge. And they do. I mean, they spread like crazy. Rhizomes often do.
Yeah.
Because they grow horizontally through the ground.
Right.
So that's how if you put a rhubarb plant in the ground, you will end up in a few years with a giant patch of rhubarb, which I love about rhubarb. It grows like a weed. It doesn't really look like very much.
Sure.
Like, it's not a particularly pretty plant because you can't see the beautiful stems when right. it's growing with its huge leaves. And then it makes just absolutely delicious pies, and I love that about it.
So I'm assuming it's not always harvested just as a weed, right? Like, presumably people actually, like, grow it and farm it. It's not yeah. just something that, like, someone goes around and, like, snatches the weeds out of the ground and sells them.
So initially it started being grown in Europe because the rhizome was actually sold, like, as mentioned before, as part of traditional Chinese medicine and as a spice, as a seasoning.
Okay.
And it was extremely valuable. It was one of the most expensive things traded in the spice trade.
Huh.
So actually Europeans went, okay, we need to start cultivating this. Like, this can grow at home. And it's really valuable, and so we should have it on our own soil.
Right.
Then, of course, it's rhizomatic. It grows like crazy. And, you know, people realize that it's also nice to eat in addition to using. And I think it, you know, sort of clearly fell out of fashion as a spice because we don't really do that anymore.
Sure.
I'm sure it's still used in TCM.
Now I'd be curious to try using it as a spice, though.
Yeah. I mean, I bet we could find it in Chinatown.
Yeah.
Yes, but it is cultivated. And I mean, obviously, it's really easy to cultivate because it spreads like crazy. The big leaves block out light so that they don't get a lot of weeds. They don't need really good soil. Like, they need sun, but not necessarily. Like, they can be okay in part shade.
Sure. They grow like a weed.
They do. However, at some point, there were farmers in, well, what I know about is England. I'm sure this was also figured out in other places, like the French love doing this with plants. But when rhubarb is put in the dark at the end of its growth cycle, so you sprout it in the light, obviously young plants need light to grow.
Sure.
But then once they're sort of established, they put them into dark sheds or smaller, like if you're not cultivating it on a large scale, you put it under a garbage pail. I've seen people do.
Maybe
like
even an umbrella would do the trick.
No, it needs to be complete darkness.
Okay.
But you can put it under a bucket or a garbage pail or whatever. And because the plant is looking for the light, the stems grow very tall, but the leaves don't grow very big because the leaves grow big in the presence of light because they grow big to catch as much light as possible. So this is called forcing rhubarb.
Okay.
And not only do the stems then grow very, very big, but they also get really sweet. The sugars get very, very concentrated in the stem. And as you know, if you've ever eaten raw rhubarb, which, like, I recommend you at least, like suck on a little piece this summer. Like, get the flavor, because we usually have it sweet. It's delicious sweet, but it's also really refreshing when it's still tart. But by concentrating the sugars in the stem, it's sort of like a Meyer lemon versus a lemon situation where it's still got the flavor, it's still tart, but it's just a little sweeter, fatter, bigger, more rare, more expensive. But that's often what like restaurants will get and use. And it also makes me really not only want to have a rhubarb patch, but also experiment with forcing rhubarb because it sounds nice.
Yeah.
Doing forced rhubarb on a large scale is pretty rare. There's, you know, a few farms that do it, but it's not like the rhubarb that you'll find in the store is forced rhubarb.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it seems like the kind of thing that's like a little too artisan to be the main crop.
Well, it's much fussier than growing it on a large scale.
Yeah, that's the way to put that. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, we watched a little video about a couple who run their farm that's a fourth generation forced rhubarb farm in England. And they have to move all of the plants into a shed where they do all of the work by candlelight to not disturb the growing of the plants. And then because it's all growing at the same time and it's all harvested around the same time, it's just insanely long days around harvest. And then they, with rhubarb, you can also get two harvests a year. So it's essentially like two insanely, insanely work-intensive growing seasons. It's very fussy and just like, it is, it's artisanal. It's something that's handed down and it's just not something that everybody is going to get super committed to.
Yeah, that's it.
But I'm really grateful for the people who are.
Yeah. And it's cool to know that it's possible, even if it's like not the most efficient or widespread version of it. It is very cool to know that people are doing it and that that practice is just like inevitably going to get passed down and like it's going to be around because people know how to do it and people think it's worth doing.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's one of those things also that's like definitely worth it on a small scale. Like if you sure. have a rhubarb patch, you can very easily force one or two plants.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a huge time intensive process. It's just a huge time intensive process when you're doing acres of it at a time.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, but you know, if you have a shed, you could plant all of your rhubarb in 5 gallon buckets and do that. I won't stop you.
I'd encourage it.
Yeah.
Even.
I've considered doing it with our garage.
I just feel like if we're going to grow like large quantities of some kind of plant in our garage.
Specifically against our lease. There's right. nothing in there about rhubarb.
I guess that's true. But does rhubarb sell for as much as weed? With grocery prices these days, it might be cheaper to smoke weed. Anyway, on that note, speaking of grocery prices, should we take it to the mid-roll and tell folks at home how they can support our grocery habits?
If you're enjoying the show so far, make sure to hit subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on so that you never miss a new episode. While you're at it, consider leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or sharing this episode with a friend. Listen, the best way to force us to grow exponentially and to concentrate our sugars, aka make us sweeter, is to spread the word and grow our audience and grow our support. That's all we really want out here.
That's it.
Also, if you could just send this to somebody who wants to send us a box of forced rhubarb, I really want to try it.
Oof, yeah.
So, you know, just going to put that out there into the universe.
Don't hide your light under a bushel. Let it shine.
Just hide your rhubarb.
And give us your rhubarb.
For every new rating and review we get during the month of Gabriel,
yeah.
we'll be donating $2 to The Depot, our local food bank here in NDG. They can turn every $1 into $3 worth of rhubarb for a family in need. So by doing the simple free act of leaving a rating and review barb of the show, you're functionally donating $6 worth of food to people who need it. There's literally no other way to force zero into six, so if that math is exciting for you, go do it. You can read all about what The Depot is doing at the link in the description of this episode.
Folks, if you are not already supporting us on Patreon, please think about doing it. If you don't know what Patreon is, let me tell you real quick. Patreon is an ongoing crowdfunding platform that lets listeners like you work directly with creators like us to produce the best possible content at the lowest possible cost to those creators. It is a way for you to network with us, to communicate with us, to commission things from us, mm-hmm. And a way to just kind of generally be supporting us financially, emotionally, morally,
psychologically,
and like get involved with the show as well. Members of our Patreon get access to our exclusive newsletter, the No Bad Food Recipe Club, and our Discord server, where we post new recipes for you to try out and share with your friends and family. And, you know, you also get the joy of knowing that the money that you're donating to this thing, as little as a dollar a month, right? Like mm-hmm. a very, very simple throw a dollar our way, goes toward helping us keep the lights on here in our studio, quite literally, because I use our Patreon money sometimes to pay the bills, and goes toward, you know, helping us make this show that we love to make for you who presumably love to listen to it. So if you're not already a member of our Patreon, please consider joining up at patreon.com/nobadfoodpod today. And if you are already a member, but you got a couple extra bucks a month kicking around in your pocket, maybe you finally remember to cancel your Amazon Prime subscription that you accidentally signed up for after a free trial. And you're like, you know, that was $14 a month, but I can give half that much to a podcast that I actually want to support instead of Jeffrey Kisses and his evil company. Patreon, help us out. Back to the show. It's Spanish for kisses.
So we mentioned pie.
We
talked about pie weed.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories about pie weed, and actually the first place I found out that rhubarb was called pie weed, is in These Happy Golden Years, which is the final book of the Laura Ingalls Wilder series. Childhood favorites. These Happy Golden Years recounts the first year of Laura's marriage to Almanzo Wilder, them starting their own little farm homestead. And she's very young. Like, she's like 19 or something. They got married very young. But the first year that they're harvesting on the property and they've got hired hands in, she's, you know, working very hard to make the giant lunch for these extremely hungry laborers who have been working in the fields all morning.
Right. Yeah.
And so you know, and I mean, if you've read any of those books, the food descriptions are just like, you can tell this is somebody who went through a famine when right. you read the descriptions of food. They're sure, just yeah. like beautiful. And she makes this beautiful rhubarb pie with, you know, the lattice crust, everything just absolutely gorgeous. She also describes the kitchen that her husband built for her with like the she has like special drawers for flour and sugar, and it's just like, I love it. Anyway, she makes this lunch and they all eat the lunch, and then she serves the pie, and she describes them all taking the first bite and just eating in absolute silence. Just absolute silence falls over the table. And then one of the field hands chews swallows. He picks up the top crust of his pie, reaches over to the sugar bowl, and just throws a few spoonfuls on top of the filling. And he goes, you know, I love it this way because we can all decide how sweet we want it. And they're all just like, oh, yeah, that's great. And just very, very graciously sidestep the fact that Laura forgot to sweeten her rhubarb pie.
Oh my God.
And I always remember that story, both because it's just so relatable, right? Like that feeling of just like, ah, shit. But also the way her friends just handle it so nicely and try so hard not to embarrass her because they know she's also been working very, very hard.
Yeah. That's, oh my God. That like devastates me, honestly. Like yeah. Those kind of moments like that,
yeah,
like I it's feel it in my bones. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But pie is not the only way to eat rhubarb. And honestly, pie is not a way I usually eat rhubarb. I don't make pies very often.
You don't make pies that often, yeah. But I know you make stuff with rhubarb a
lot. Because I always have rhubarb. Yeah. Early in our relationship, well, no, actually before we were dating, before we were dating, there was a time when we were on the street and we passed a woman walking with a large bag of rhubarb, and I chased her down the street to ask her where she had gotten it because I hadn't seen any in stores before.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I have no shame about that.
No,
you shouldn't. I stand by that because I look for it with great anticipation. I am like a kid on Christmas with rhubarb season. But I don't fuck with pies that much. Like, sure. It's just pastry is a whole process. And I find that pastry, like pie crust specifically, has to be really good or it's not worth it.
Okay, yeah.
And getting it to be really good is like a whole thing. So I usually don't mess with it. I grew up eating a lot of rhubarb, strawberry rhubarb crumble. That's really lovely. Or rhubarb, apple rhubarb also is really good. Cranberry rhubarb. Then you have to sweeten that a lot more, though, because they're both very tart. These days, the thing I make the most often with rhubarb is something called rhubarb snacking cake.
Okay.
And this is a recipe from, surprise, surprise,
Deb Perlman.
Yes. she has just so many snacks. She has a whole cookbook of snacking cakes. Like, that's who this woman is, and I adore her. And it is a very just simple butter cake base with a little ginger in it, because ginger and rhubarb play really nicely together. Rhizomes, and then a layer of rhubarb that you macerate with sugar. So you cut it up into like 1-inch pieces, you toss it with sugar, you set it aside while you make the rest of the cake.
Right.
And rhubarb, like berries, just like macerates down really beautifully with sugar.
Sure.
It really preserves the flavor but also sweetens it up. So then you spread a layer of that, and then you make a really like chunky big crumb streusel topping with ginger in it as well, and bake that. And it's just, it's jammy, it's tart, it's really easy to eat, and it's absolutely delicious. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely love that.
Yeah, that snacking cake is magical.
Oh, it's so good.
If you guys want to know more about crumbs, crumbles, crapples, what's the third one? Crisps, crumbles, and cobblers. And cobblers. Crumbs, crapples, and cropplers.
Crisps, crips.
If you want to know more about Bloods and Crips, we had a whole episode
somewhere else.
Yeah, we had a whole episode about crisps, crumbles, and cobblers. Wow, I'm having trouble with
crumbles, cropples, and crisps, crumbles, and cobblers. My favorite category of baked goods.
So we did a whole episode about crisps, crumbles, and cobblers. Three words that I have no difficulty saying.
Say that five times fast.
I refuse.
They're my favorite category of baked goods. Mm. I love them. And rhubarb is fantastic in all of them. Mm-hmm. It's not just the flavor. The flavor, I mean, I love tart, like sweet and tart. That's like, I love lemon bars, citrusy things, and rhubarb.
Yeah.
And it's so good. And sour jelly babies. What are those called? Sour patch kids.
There we go.
Love those too.
Yeah, but it's not just about the flavor. It's a textural thing too, right?
Well, rhubarb actually has a lot of pectin in it.
Mm-hmm.
And pectin is what you usually add to jams and jellies to thicken it.
Right.
So as you know, with a crap, crumble, and crumbles, mm-hmm. You want the filling to thicken up a little bit. And often you'll add a little flour or a little cornstarch to kind of hold that juice together.
Yeah.
But with rhubarb, it has so much natural pectin that if you're using at least 50% of it in your baked good, you actually don't have to add more thickener because the pectin itself will kind of hold that filling together. And that's part of the reason I really love it for like crustless baked things, because it just holds together really nicely. Because it's so bright and fresh and tart also, it plays really well with like sweet caramelized flavors. So I love rhubarb with brown sugar.
Ooh, okay, sure.
I talked about ginger before, but I find that, you know, it's a very like, we're talking about it very springily right now because it's almost spring.
Sure.
But it's also a fall crop.
Mm-hmm.
And it plays really nicely with those fall flavors as well. Sure. It's just extremely versatile.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of nice. Like for a fall crop to lend itself well to pies, like I feel like fall is pie season a
absolutely.
Little bit, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that works out really well in its favor.
Mm-hmm. It keeps well. What I always mean to do and forget to do, I did it like 2 years and then kind of have forgotten since then, but is to buy a lot of rhubarb, chop it, and freeze it
mm-hmm.
because it freezes extremely well.
Sure.
And then you can have rhubarb year round, and that's just a lovely thing.
Yeah. So that's our pro tip this mm-hmm. year. You know, when does rhubarb season start?
Oh, any day now.
Okay.
Like it's one of the earliest crops. I mean, around here, the earliest ones will have been grown in a greenhouse.
Sure. Yeah.
But generally I would say around May.
Okay.
Yeah.
So keep an eye out.
You know. It's probably already in the shops for the south.
Okay, so
yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Buy some.
We just have an extremely short growing season because we live in hell.
Yeah, we do. We do. Okay, speaking of hell, I have a game for you.
Hit me.
All right. This is a game called Rhubarb or Kentucky Derby Racehorse.
What?
The rules are simple. I'm going to read a list of 6 names. And you have to tell me which ones you think are actual cultivars or varieties of rhubarb, and which ones you think are Kentucky Derby horse race.
This isn't
names.
Even fair, because with apples, I actually know a lot of apple cultivars. I don't know any rhubarb cultivars.
Play with me.
Okay.
We're going to have fun today. All right. Number one, granddad's favorite.
Rhubarb.
Yeah. You got that. All right.
Granddads love rhubarb.
Granddads do famously. Love rhubarb. Number two, Reed's Early Superb.
Rhubarb.
Yep. Number three, Stein Champagne.
Kentucky Derby.
Rhubarb.
Beautiful. Okay.
Number four.
Are these all rhubarb?
Timperley Early.
Timperley Early? Rhubarb.
Yep.
Yeah.
And number five, Pioneer of Medina.
Horse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And number six, Mandarin Hero.
Horse.
All right. You got 5 out of 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, if they say, like, early in them, that's a dead giveaway.
Okay.
You wouldn't know this because you're not a gardener.
Well, there you go.
Anyway.
I'm surprised you got granddad's favorite that fast, because that, to me, I'd name a horse that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, but I'd name a rhubarb that in a heartbeat.
My grandpa loves rhubarb.
Does your grandpa love horses?
I think my grandpa probably has, like, a respect for horses. I don't know how grandpa feels about horses.
Text him right now. You'll get a response in 3 weeks from his partner.
Hey, Tommy. Grandpa loves horses.
I would name a horse rhubarb.
It's a good name.
Yeah.
I would name a horse grandpa's favorite.
I would name a horse grandpa's favorite rhubarb.
Sure. Grandpa's rhubarb. Could we cut out the favorite?
Sure.
Pappy's barbs?
No.
No.
Stop.
All right. On that note,
I want to talk about rhubarb in one more application, because this is something I tried many years ago,
okay.
like 8, 9 years ago,
whoa.
That has stayed with me ever since.
Okay.
I was in Nova Scotia, and I went to Lunenburg. And in Lunenburg, there is a distillery called Ironworks Distillery.
Mm-hmm.
That's in an old forge. And they make something that they call rhubarb esprit. And it's a liqueur, but it's not like any liqueur you've ever had.
Okay.
So a liqueur is made by using sugar to get the juice out of the fruit.
Okay.
And then turning that into alcohol, like fermenting that or distilling it or whatever. I don't know. I think they use less sugar than most liqueurs do. And that's why they call it esprit. It's just very light. It tasted exactly like biting into a stalk of rhubarb.
Interesting.
And that to me is incredible because it is so hard to capture fresh juice flavors. You know, the sugars do their funky sugar thing, like apple juice doesn't taste like biting into an apple, but it was exactly like biting into a stalk of rhubarb.
Neat.
And it was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And I have, I've thought about it ever since. Like, it was so good. Something I like to do with rhubarb in rhubarb season, and I will always do when I'm baking with rhubarb, is just, I'll snack on it. Sometimes I'll dip it in sugar. Sometimes I'll just snack on it. And that was what that reminded me of, was just eating it. So shout out to Ironworks Distillery. They're still open. They're still around. If you live anywhere near Lunenburg, definitely go check them out. They left such an impression on me.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, it's just they're doing magic.
I love that. I wouldn't have instinctively thought of rhubarb for this, but like
me neither.
I'm sure you could use it in cocktails too.
Oh, it's they make a gin as well because they're a distillery.
Sure.
And I tried. They like made me a little something with gin and rhubarb, and it was so good.
Yeah.
Petition to make I don't know if you could make a non-alcoholic version of that rhubarb esprit, but like it would be nice for our sober home.
I wonder if it would work if we just like put some rhubarb in some sparkling water for a little while.
Well, I was thinking we could juice rhubarb this year. Like, we do have a juicer.
We do.
We could juice some rhubarb.
Yeah.
Add some sugar.
Yeah.
Try that out.
Kind of make a rhubarb simple syrup almost.
Yeah, but I don't want to cook it because if we cook it, it'll change the flavor.
Okay.
Like, that's why the cold extraction is so good, why just like macerating it is so good, because you don't cook it, so you don't lose those sugars. People, if you're new here, maceration, because that's a kind of funny word for some people out of context,
it's not what it sounds like.
You take a fruit, or I guess you can take a vegetable too. You cut it up, you mix it with sugar, and the sugar draws the juices out, and then they mix with the sugar and you get a syrup, and it's a fresher tasting syrup than a cooked simple syrup, because you don't have the heat going on and changing the chemistry of the thing.
Yeah. You want it cold pressed.
We've talked before about esters, the flavor molecules. Some of them are very volatile and will just denature the minute they warm up. So yes, that. I want to try it. I love rhubarb.
Well, I'm down. We were just saying before we started recording that we want to start getting more into mocktails this year.
Yes, so really do.
Maybe that can be a project for us, is to find a way to make a really good rhubarb mocktail.
Rhubarb and rosemary also really nice together.
Sure, I'd believe it.
Yeah. Final note that I did not talk about yet with rhubarb. It is so gosh darn pretty.
Yeah.
It is beautiful. Like, you do get a variety. Some rhubarb, you'll get it more green. Some, it's more red. I saw somebody do a tart on TikTok where they did a mosaic with, like, a color gradient with the different shades that happen in the rhubarb stems.
That's fun.
I've seen, like, rhubarb upside down cakes with beautiful patterns done because you really can kind of use them like tiles. Like, you chop up these stalks, you can cut them on an angle. You can just cut them into, like, 1-inch pieces and play with them like tiles. Like, they're very, very pretty. It's a humble vegetable with really just, like, there's so much you can do with it. It's so satisfying to all of the senses. It feels like a breath of spring. And if you have a patch of ground, so easy to grow. Try to get a division rather than a rhizome, because it's going to take forever to start growing from the rhizome. But if you get Like, if you have neighbors who garden, somebody has rhubarb, and they'll give you some because it keeps healthy when you divide it. They needs to be divided every 5 years or so. And you can also get them at, like, nurseries and greenhouses and stuff. Get yourself some mature rhubarb plants, stick them in your garden, let them grow, and they will just give you so much for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. This is a general plug for getting to know your neighbors. And if they garden, getting to know their gardens.
My neighborhood, our neighborhood, has a Facebook gardening group. Mm-hmm. And I know not everybody uses Facebook, and I'm sure there are non-Facebook gardening groups. But if you use Facebook, it's worth checking if your neighborhood or town or wherever you live has one. Because I got our currant bushes for free on that group.
Currant with an A, just to clarify.
Yes. I got our raspberry canes on that group for free.
Also with an A.
I got a bunch of lilies of the valley that are in our garden now for free. Like, I've gotten herbs. Like, people just give stuff away.
Yeah.
And then you can, or they'll be like, I want to trade these for this. Or like, I want to trade these seeds for that seeds. Or does anybody have this kind of cutting? And it's just like extremely fun. And I've really gotten to know some of my neighbors pretty well through that. So yeah, big plug, like, it's so nice. Gardening brings community together. Mm-hmm. And even if your community gardens have a 2-year waiting list like ours do, you can still meet people through gardening.
Yeah.
Also, just like the number of neighbors I've met because they stop to chat with me while I'm working in the garden.
Sure.
Because our garden's in the front of our house. And like, that's so nice. And I'll have people who like come and like say like, oh, I always look forward to like this part of your garden, or like, it's just so nice.
Yeah.
I've like just given people berries off our bushes. Like, we'll be chatting and I'm like, here, have a raspberry. And it's so nice.
Yeah, that's it. And like, it takes nothing to be friendly with your neighbors.
Yeah.
You know, like, really, truly just saying hi. You don't have to work too hard at it.
Yeah.
Put yourself out there.
I mean, and this is a plug for just going outside.
Oh my God. I don't know if I'd go that far. I was thinking more of a like wave out the window kind of situation.
I mean, Tom doesn't go outside, but like, we make tall snowman every year. Have we talked about tall snowman on the show yet?
That's the other thing that random passersby tell us they look forward to about our garden.
Yeah, is we do tall snowman every year, and we have people who look for tall snowman every year. Mm-hmm. This year, tall snowman did not last very long. We had a bad snow year, but
or a great snow year, depending on who you ask.
True.
We had a real mild winter this year.
It was nice. We had a beautiful New England winter this year.
Perfect.
Well, not, I wouldn't go that far.
No, it was pretty yucky still.
Anyway, gardening, community. Someday I will give you all my spiel on how fascism doesn't want us to have gardens, mm-hmm, and how going outside and sitting on your stoop is an anti-fascist and anti-capitalist act. Mm-hmm. But it really is.
Yeah.
Getting to know your neighbors is community building and anti-capitalist inherently.
Hell yeah.
So. Yeah. Also, rhubarb is great.
If there's two things you should take away from this, it's sit on your porch more and eat rhubarb.
Sit on your porch eating rhubarb.
Do it.
Do it.
Your neighbors might think you're weird at first, but at least they're thinking about you now. That's the first step to being friends. There's one more thing we need to do before we wrap up today. It's something we haven't really had the opportunity to do in a hot minute because of Munch Madness. Are you ready to reach into the turtle's butt?
This is not a phrase I claim.
All right, we have
But yes, let's see what the Koopa has for us today.
We have a lovely Koopa here on our studio table. His shell is currently plugged with...
An onion.
And now, would you like to do the honors?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Inside of this turtle shell are several small pieces of paper and also an iPhone dongle.
That's what we're talking about next week.
Next week, baby. It's not a food show anymore. on these pieces of paper are written topics for episodes of the show, some from us, some from our lovely patrons over at patreon.com/nobadfoodpod. And, you know, we pull a topic and it's what we will talk about the next time. It's just the two of us alone here in the studio. So what do we got this time?
Ooh.
We got
rice pudding.
We got rice pudding. Exciting.
I love talking about rice pudding.
All right.
And this was a request from one of our patrons.
Indeed. Do you remember who?
It was Aslam.
All right. Amazing.
Yeah. Aslam said that we talked so much about rice during Munch Madness, but we didn't talk enough about rice pudding, and I have to agree.
Sure.
From Kier to like classic stovetop, there is rice pudding around the world. Mm-hmm. Arguably, you could even say congee is a rice pudding.
Sure.
Although it's not sweet. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna dig right into a big bowl of rice pudding.
Yeah.
In the meantime, you can shoot us a message. Let us know your favorite rice pudding. Is there something you think we should cover in this topic? Let us know by next Saturday.
All right, folks. That's it for us this week. Thank you so much for listening to No Bad Food. Do you want to be part of the conversation? You can hit us up on the socials at No Bad Food Pod and individually at Tefer Bear and at Tom Zalatni. If you like this episode and want to help us make the show even better, head to patreon.com/nobadfoodpod to donate. For as little as $1 a month, you'll be $1 a month, you'll be Jiminy Cricket. Joining the ranks of fine folks like Chantal H, Gab, Erica, Andrew, Chantal T, David, Mallory, Sarah, Carol Ann, Rachel, Aslam, Anne, and Eric. Our patrons get access to all kinds of awesome perks, including the ability to request topics for episodes of the show. If that's exciting for you, head to patreon.com/nobadfoodpod and make it happen.
We also have merch. You can hit the merch link in the description of this episode to get all sorts of great stuff from our friends over at Podcavern. We don't yet have branded rhubarb, but that's coming. And of course, you can support us for free by leaving a rating and review on your podcatcher of choice and by sharing this episode with a friend. Our theme music is by Zach, Crips, Crabs, and Conglers, Ingalls, and our cover art is by David, Granddad's favorite, Flam. You can find links for both of them in the description of this episode.
And last but certainly not least, the show is produced by me, Tom Zalatni, and you, Tefra Jemian, and edited by me, Tom Zalatni, as part of the Podcavern Network. You can find out about all the great shows on our network at www.podcavern.com. We'll see you next week, and in the meantime, remember,
there's no such thing as bad food.
And in the meantime, remember, it's Spanish for kisses.
It just takes a little time. It takes a little time. It takes a little time with me. I hope you don't mind. We'll take it slow this time.
No Bad Food is a proud member of the Podcavern Network. For more great shows like this one, head to podcavern.com.
Hello, folks. I'm Katie.
I'm Vinny.
And we host the Learn Real Good podcast.
It's a comedy podcast about science.
It's also a science podcast with comedy.
Each episode, we interview a science grad student about their research.
And we keep it casual, so you don't need to be a nerd to follow along.
We also share some of the latest science newts.
I think you mean the latest science news.
Well, people need to hear more about amphibians.
Well, I agree with that. So look us up on your favorite podcast source and
Learn Real Good. Presented by the Podcavern Network.
Close enough.
What Mega Man boss would make the most terrifying kaiju?
I, for one, want to be the first to welcome our new kaiju overlords.
How would Adam Sandler fit in the MCU?
I injected myself with the Green Goblin serum. Oh!
Debate This is a podcast that asks the questions about your favorite video games and comics that no one is asking. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you download podcasts. And on social media at Debate This Cast.
None of that is mind control.
It's so close.
It's not so close.